Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine for a moment a company that is, well, an absolute powerhouse in its industry, an undisputed North American market leader. Yet for many of us, it might not be a name that immediately springs to mind, you know, in everyday conversation. Today, we're doing a deep dive into Ferguson Plytrayac, ticker symbol FERRE. They're this colossal firm that quietly but really effectively dominates the distribution of plumbing, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, HVAC, and just a whole host of other essential building products across North America. Our mission here for you, our listener, is to take all the investment analysis and research you've shared with us and really extract the most important nuggets of knowledge, those core insights, giving you a shortcut to being truly well-informed about this, frankly, fascinating, indispensable business. We're going to peel back the layers, explore what makes it such a compelling investment case, how it operates with such precision, and you know where its future growth and challenges really lie. And let's be absolutely clear from the start. This isn't just about mundane pipes, fittings, or fixtures. This is about the essential, often unseen backbone of every residential home, every commercial building, and every piece of critical infrastructure that makes our modern lives possible.
What's truly fascinating here, picking up on that exact point, is precisely Ferguson's almost understated yet incredibly unique and formidable position. They operate within a market that is not only vast, deeply fragmented, and fiercely competitive, but crucially, it's built on fundamental non-discretionary demand. This isn't a business riding, you know, ephemeral trends or relying on here today, gone tomorrow fads. Not at all. Instead, it's built on the constant essential need for people to have functional plumbing, heating, and cooling systems, and for infrastructure to be built and maintained. It's fundamental stuff. Ferguson's a sheer scale, a business model designed for resilience and strategically weighted towards stability, and a deeply disciplined approach to how it allocates its capital. All position it to compound value consistently. Consistently and predictably, even through varying economic cycles and, you know, market volatility. A critical element we'll definitely delve into is its strategic pivot to become a pure-play North American company. This wasn't merely a geographical shift. It was a decisive, years-long strategic transformation that, well, streamlined its narrative for investors, eliminated complexities, and crucially, concentrated its resources and management focus squarely on its highest return, highest growth opportunities. It's a really key part of their success story.
So that immediately strikes my curiosity. What exactly does Ferguson do beyond just, you know, moving building supplies from a manufacturer to a job site? How do they truly differentiate themselves in such a vast market, especially when we consider the sheer scale you mentioned? I mean, we're talking about them being the largest value-added distributor of plumbing, HVAC, and other building products in North America. That's huge. And the total addressable market for these products and services is just staggering, right? Estimated at around $330 billion, that's an enormous economic landscape to operate within.
That's absolutely right. Their fundamental role at its core is that of a critical intermediary within this sprawling, often messy, and highly localized landscape. Think about the logistical challenge. They aggregate products, literally hundreds of thousands of individuals. I mean, just think about managing that inventory from approximately 36,000 different suppliers. That's an incredibly fragmented supplier base requiring really sophisticated management. And then they distribute these products to an equally diverse and vast customer base. Over 1 million professional contractors, businesses, and even direct consumers across North America. But as you rightly hinted, their value proposition extends far, far beyond simple logistics. It's not just about moving boxes. Their stated purpose is to make their customers' complex projects simple, successful, and sustainable. And this isn't just some catchy marketing slogan. It's a deep operational commitment that defines their entire business model.
Okay, so that raises the question then, how do they actually achieve that promise? It's not just about moving boxes from A to B, as you said.
Exactly. They differentiate themselves through several key factors. First, they offer unparalleled product availability. For a contractor on a tight deadline, waiting days for a part means lost time, lost labor, potentially lost revenue. It's a killer. Ferguson's extensive inventory, strategically stocked across its network, means they can usually provide what's needed when it's needed, often same day or next day. Second, they back this up with deep technical expertise. They employ around 35,000 associates, and many of these individuals aren't just order takers, they're problem solvers. They're highly knowledgeable in specific product categories, building codes, you name it. They can provide consultative advice, help with product selection, even troubleshoot complex installations. It's real expertise.
So they're adding value beyond just the product itself.
Precisely. And then, crucially, there's a comprehensive suite of value-added services that truly embed Ferguson into their customers' workflows, making them pretty indispensable. For example, they offer detailed project management, helping contractors coordinate complex jobs from start to finish. That's a huge burden lifted. They perform product takeoffs directly from blueprints, ensuring the correct materials are ordered, minimizing waste, preventing costly delays from wrong parts. They provide custom fabrication, like pre-cutting pipes or assembling mechanical components, which saves valuable on-site labor time, a huge efficiency gain. And perhaps most critical for a busy professional contractor is their just-in-time job site delivery. Imagine a commercial construction site space is tight, every minute counts. Ferguson can deliver exactly what's needed precisely when it's needed. Reduces clutter, optimizes workflow. These services are so deeply integrated that they create genuinely high switching costs. Once a contractor relies on Ferguson for this level of partnership, well, it becomes very difficult and frankly expensive to go elsewhere.
That makes perfect sense. It's about becoming that indispensable partner, right? Transforming a transactional relationship into something much more collaborative, like an extension of their customer's own team. Now, you mentioned that strategic pivot to North America earlier. That seems like a massive undertaking. Can you elaborate? Their origins were actually across the Atlantic, weren't they?
Exactly right. The company we now know as Ferguson Peltech actually originated as Wolseley Pillock. It was a much broader multi-geography conglomerate headquartered in the UK. But over the last decade, management executed a very deliberate and truly transformative strategic pivot. This involved a series of strategic divestitures, systematically selling off all their European and UK operations, a big cleanup. This process culminated in the significant sale of their Wolseley UK business to a private equity firm back in January 2021 for, I think, 308 million. That was a highly significant moment, kind of the end of an era and the beginning of a new, much more focused one.
So they really streamlined things.
Yeah, totally. The strategic realignment was finalized in August 2024 when they completed a corporate restructuring. They established Ferguson Enterprises Inc. as the new parent company, with its primary stock listing prominently on the New York Stock Exchange. And for you as the listener, this isn't just some corporate reorganization shuffle. It really demonstrates a clear, decisive management strategy to unlock shareholder value. By shedding those lower margin, slower growth European assets and aligning exclusively with the more dynamic, higher growth North American market, they effectively eliminated what's often called a conglomerate discount, you know, where the market values the whole less than the sum of its parts because it's too complex.
Right. Investors struggle to value disparate businesses together.
Exactly. The old Wolseley Plefkwell, its slower growth European bits, were essentially dragging down the valuation multiple that the high growth, higher margin North American operations really deserved. By becoming a pure play North American entity, Ferguson presented a much clearer, more streamlined investment thesis. Simple story. This allowed the market to value it more directly against its higher multiple growth-oriented U.S. peers. And critically, it focused all of management's attention and capital allocation squarely on the most profitable and highest growth opportunities. It was a very smart, value-accretive move that truly redefined the company.
Okay, that brings up a critical question, especially given how inherently cyclical construction markets can be. We all know that. So with this new sharpened North American focus, how does Ferguson manage to balance its exposure to those inevitable ups and downs? How do they build in resilience against economic swings?
That's a crucial aspect of their strategic design and, honestly, a cornerstone of their appeal to many investors. For fiscal year 2024, their revenue was almost perfectly balanced, split roughly 50-50 between residential and non-residential end markets. That inherent diversification helps smooth out some volatility, right? Because those two sectors don't always move in perfect lockstep. But a fundamental component of their defensive posture is the significant weighting of their business mix towards repair, maintenance, and improvement activities, RMI. This segment, which often involves non-discretionary demand, think about it, a burst pipe needs fixing now, a heating system failing in winter, can't wait. That RMI piece accounts for a substantial 60% to 67% of their net sales. That's huge.
So the majority is less tied to big new building projects.
Precisely. This focus on RMI provides an incredibly durable base of demand that is far less sensitive to broader economic cycles compared to, say, new construction. New construction is highly discretionary, very sensitive to interest rates, consumer confidence, all that stuff. Think about it. Even in a recession, people still need their plumbing fixed, their HVAC systems maintained, essential repairs done. These aren't purchases you can easily put off. New construction, in contrast, constitutes only the remaining 33% to 40% of their sales. That's the more volatile piece. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, this heavy RMI focus is a fundamental reason why Ferguson can navigate dynamic and challenging market conditions with significantly greater stability than many pure-play new construction suppliers. It's truly built for resilience. It provides a robust, less cyclical core to their business.
Okay, so they're operating at immense scale. They're strategically focused on this high-growth North American market, and they've positioned themselves for impressive resilience through that RMI focus. That sounds like a really powerful combination. But what truly makes Ferguson so hard to compete with? What's their secret sauce, if you will? What allows them to maintain such a dominant position against those, 10,000 other competitors you mentioned earlier? Because even with the best strategy, execution and defensibility are everything, right?
You've hit on the core of it, defensibility. Their primary competitive moat, what makes them so incredibly difficult to dislodge, is their immense scale combined with unmatched network density. We're talking about a physical network, approximately 1,800 locations. Just picture that map, strategically spread across North America. And this is further supported by a sophisticated web of regional and market distribution centers, which are constantly optimizing inventory and logistics behind the scenes. This extensive physical footprint means they are incredibly close to their customers, like within 60 miles of 95% of their North American customer base. That proximity is huge.
Wow, 95% within 60 miles. That's impressive reach.
It's a massive operational and competitive advantage. It enables industry-leading product availability and rapid fulfillment, often same-day or next-day delivery. For professional contractors, time is literally money. Project delays, whether it's waiting for a part or a supplier being too far away, directly translate to lost revenue, unhappy clients, damaged reputations. It's critical. So having a supplier like Ferguson who can deliver exactly what they need, precisely when they need it, is a critical, almost non-negotiable, which further increases sales volumes and reinforces that purchasing power and the efficiency of their entire network. You see the cycle.
Yeah, it's a virtuous cycle. Scale leads to better service, which leads to more customers, which leads to more scale.
Exactly. It makes it incredibly difficult for smaller players to compete on either price, availability, or speed. They just can't match the efficiencies or the inventory breadth.
That's a fantastic illustration of how sheer scale truly becomes a strategic asset, creating that powerful self-reinforcing loop. It's not just about being big, it's about what that size enables. But beyond this impressive physical network and operational advantage, what about the human element? You mentioned those deep relationships keeping customers coming back.
Absolutely. The human element, the cultivation of deep relationships on both the supplier and customer sides, is another significant pillar of their competitive position. Can't overlook that. On the demand side, they serve over 1 million customers. And remarkably, as I think I mentioned, no single customer represents more than 1% of their revenue.
Still amazing.
It is. This extreme diversification means their demand base is highly resilient, not exposed to the fortunes of any single large client. These relationships are painstakingly cultivated and maintained by their approximately 35,000 associates. And this isn't just a sales force in the traditional sense. These are highly knowledgeable individuals who provide consultative advice, technical support, deep product expertise. They become trusted advisors. They help customers navigate complex choices, troubleshoot issues, even identify more efficient solutions for their projects. This fosters deep loyalty, turning a transaction into a partnership built on trust. And on the supply side, that diversified network of 36,000 suppliers minimizes dependence, enhances bargaining power, and ensures consistent product supply. It works both ways.
And are they keeping up with technology and distribution that seems increasingly vital?
Oh, definitely. They're certainly not ignoring the modern edge of technology. Ferguson is actively investing in a sophisticated omni-channel strategy. It seamlessly integrates its robust physical branch network with a comprehensive suite of digital tools. It's not either, it's both. Their proprietary digital platforms, for example, offer customers intuitive tools for order and, quote, management, giving them transparency and control. Very useful. They can select fulfillment options, immediate pickup, schedule job site delivery, track their budgets, access technical specs, installation guides. These features enhance customer productivity, simplify complex tasks, and critically increase stickiness by making Ferguson systems deeply embedded in their customers' daily operations. harder to leave. Furthermore, they have a strong business-to-consumer or B2C e-commerce presence through their Bill.com brand. This serves individual consumers and, you know, light professional customers, broadening their market reach and capturing a different segment of demand that complements their core pro contractor business.
Okay, and those value-added services you touched on earlier, how critical are they in practice?
They are absolutely critical. It ties back to that value proposition beyond just logistics. They actively move beyond merely distributing products. These services include performing detailed product takeoffs from blueprints, huge time saver, ensures accuracy, offering value engineering advice to optimize cost and performance, providing custom fabrication services, pre-cutting pipes, custom ductwork saves that crucial on-site labor, and offering product kitting packaging, all components needed for a specific task together. Again, efficiency. They also provide comprehensive project management support, helping customers coordinate various aspects of complex jobs. By embedding these services so deeply into the customer's core operations, Ferguson becomes an indispensable strategic partner, not just a supplier. And that, as we said, creates significant barriers to exit. The cost and disruption of recreating that integrated partnership elsewhere would be prohibitive for many customers.
Zoom out a bit now. They operate in this colossal $340 billion market. What does that market look like beyond Ferguson itself? What are the big trends shaping the industry that Ferguson navigates, both the, you know, tailwinds pushing it forward and the potential headwinds it has to brace against? Understanding that landscape is crucial.
It's indeed a fascinating and dynamic landscape, and one that Ferguson is particularly well adapted to navigate, I'd argue. As we've discussed, the North American distribution market for these building products is vast and, importantly, highly fragmented. Over 10,000 small to medium-sized independent competitors. Many are family-owned businesses serving very localized markets. And that's a key insight. The industry is fundamentally local in nature. Most pros operate within about a 20-mile radius of their base, frequenting local branches where they've built relationships. This really underscores the strategic importance of Ferguson's dense, localized branch network. It's not just about having a big footprint, but having the right footprint, close to the customer.
So that local presence is key, even for a giant like Ferguson.
Absolutely critical. Now, several powerful long-term trends are actively reshaping this distribution landscape. First, there's relentless consolidation. The fragmented nature of the market provides a very long runway for growth through acquisition. Larger, well-capitalized distributors like Ferguson are actively rolling up the industry. They acquire smaller regional players, expanding geographic reach, enhancing product lines, acquiring customer relationships. This is a structural trend, not a blip. Second, digital transformation is a huge factor. E-commerce is rapidly gaining traction. Current projections suggest contractors could be sourcing nearly half their materials online by 2030. That's a major shift. This is driving significant investment in robust digital platforms and omni-channel capabilities. But the challenge is managing complex online orders while still preserving that high-touch, consultative service that customers, especially for technical products, still really value. It's about integration, not just replacement. Third, supply chain resilience. This became absolutely critical post-pandemic, didn't it? Product availability is a massive differentiator now. Leading distributors, including Ferguson, are investing heavily in logistics, tech, AI forecasting, warehouse automation, diversifying suppliers, optimizing inventory to ensure they can reliably meet demand no matter what.
Right. Reliability became paramount. What about the broader economic climate?
Well, the industry's performance is intrinsically linked to the health of both residential and non-residential construction markets. No surprise there. And these are highly sensitive to macro factors like interest rates, GDP growth, consumer confidence. We've seen this play out recently. During 2023 and 2024, the residential sector was definitely constrained by those higher mortgage rates, impacting affordability and dampening new builds and big renovations. In stark contrast, though, the non-residential sector has been supported by strong multi-year tailwinds from massive government stimulus and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, IIJA, the CHIEPS Act. These are channeling trillions into public works, manufacturing, plus that whole trend of onshoring manufacturing. So it's a bit of a mixed picture, but Ferguson is positioned well for the stronger parts.
And competitively, you mentioned specialized players like Wasco or Core in Maine. How does Ferguson stack up against them, especially with these market shifts?
Ferguson's unparalleled scale gives it that dominant #1 or #2 market share in segments generating over 75% of its revenue. Their leadership is broad, not just one niche. While you have specialists Watsco and HVAC, Core in Maine and Waterworks Site 1 in landscape, what's particularly fascinating here and a real structural advantage for Ferguson is this trend. The rise of the dual trade professional. contractors who do both plumbing and HVAC work, it's becoming more common for efficiency.
Ah, interesting. So they need supplies for both trades.
Exactly. Think about the contractor who used to drive to separate plumbing and HVAC suppliers for one job. Huge waste of time. Ferguson's integrated. Local branches mean they can now get everything needed. Plumbing fittings, copper pipe, furnace filters, ductwork from one stop. That might save them hours a week. That translates directly into more jobs, higher profitability for them. Ferguson estimates this combined market opportunity at around $100 billion, with these dual trade contractors representing a significant $30 billion slice. This trend creates a distinct structural advantage for a broadline distributor like Ferguson that more specialized peers just can't easily replicate. They'd need to totally overhaul their model. And Ferguson isn't just watching this. They're actively training their sales force and optimizing inventory to better serve this evolving customer. It's a strategic focus.
Okay, that's a powerful story of strategy, moat, market understanding. But as we always say, strategy needs validation by results. So does the financial performance actually back all this up? Let's talk numbers. How has Ferguson been doing financially? Because that's the proof, right?
Absolutely. The numbers tell the tale. And in Ferguson's case, it's a story of, well, pretty consistent excellence. They have a very strong track record of top-line growth. Net sales climbed from about $18.2 billion in fiscal 2018 to an impressive $29.6 billion in fiscal 2024. That's significant growth. And this growth isn't just riding the market. It's a direct result of both organic market share gains driven by that superior service and availability we talked about, and a programmatic, disciplined acquisition strategy. Just to give you a sense, in a strong market year like FY 2022, they saw impressive 23.5% organic growth, plus another 1.8% from acquisitions. But even in a tougher, flatter market like FY 2024, where many competitors likely struggled, acquisitions still contributed a meaningful 1.8% to sales. That helped offset market headwinds and some modest price deflation they saw. Management explicitly targets outperforming their underlying markets by 300 to 400 basis points annually through these organic efforts. That shows real focus on share gain.
So growing faster than the market consistently, what about profitability?
Profitability has grown impressively right alongside that revenue. Adjusted operating profit more than doubled over this period from $1.4 billion in FY18 to $2.8 billion in FY24. Now, you will see some margin fluctuations, and it's important to understand why. The post-pandemic inflationary environment gave them a big but temporary tailwind. Their adjusted operating margin peaked at an unusually high 10.3% in FY2022, partly because they sold existing lower-cost inventory at higher prices. As commodity prices normalized and costs like wages stayed higher, margins did moderate, settling at a still very healthy 9.5% in FY2024. This isn't really a sign of weakness. It's more a return to a sustainable but still robust level of profitability that reflects their core efficiency and pricing power.
And what about efficiency? Are they just growing bigger or are they growing smarter, making every dollar count? Because in a capital-intensive business like distribution, that's critical.
That's the crucial distinction. And this is where Ferguson truly shines and shows its, frankly, elite quality. Their ability to generate exceptionally high returns on the capital they employ is a hallmark. Their return on capital employed, or ROCE, basically, how efficiently they use capital to make profits, has been consistently strong. It peaked at that anomalous 40.4% in FY2022, an extraordinary figure, really driven by that unique inflation moment. Since then, it has normalized to a robust 31.1% in FY2024. Again, this normalization isn't weakness. It reflects a return to a highly sustainable yet genuinely elite level of capital efficiency. Remarkable for a distribution business of this scale. So for you as the listener, these numbers tell you Ferguson isn't just growing. It's doing so in an incredibly disciplined and efficient way, generating substantial returns from investments. That's a key sign of a high-quality compounder.
Yeah, that ROCE number, even normalized, is impressive.
It really is. Their return on equity, ROE, is similarly strong, reported at an impressive 34.6%, just further underscores their financial prowess. And finally, their business model is inherently highly cash generative, provides significant financial flexibility. They generated a substantial $1.9 billion in net cash from operations in FY24, following an exceptionally strong $2.7 billion in FY23. This consistent cash flow provides ample funding for all their capital allocation priorities. A key driver is effective working capital management. For instance, in FY23, management deliberately and successfully reduced inventory levels from post-pandemic highs, which significantly boosted operating cash flow. Shows active, smart management.
The numbers are clearly compelling. Robust, efficient business. But those numbers also reflect the people steering the ship, right? So who's at the helm and how do they decide where to put all that cash? Let's talk about the leadership and their strategic playbook for creating value.
It's truly a leadership team built on deep experience and a proven track record within this specific industry. Not just general executives. CEO Kevin Murphy and CFO Bill Brundage are industry veterans with profound institutional knowledge. Mr. Murphy, for instance, joined Ferguson way back in 1999 through the acquisition of his family's business. So he's been central to their growth and strategic focus for decades. He knows this business inside out. This team has a well-established track record of operational excellence, successful M&A integration, which is complex at their scale, integrating all those deals, and a strong, consistent commitment to shareholder returns. They've returned something like $11 billion to shareholders over the past decade through dividends and buybacks. That's significant.
Okay, so experienced leadership. What's their framework for deciding where the money goes?
They have a very clear, consistent, and disciplined four-pillar capital allocation framework. It provides a predictable, transparent model for deploying cash flow. It's key to their success. And the priorities are in a specific, deliberate order. First priority always is organic reinvestment back into the core business. In FY24, that was about $400 million in capital expenditures. These investments are crucial tech upgrades like warehouse automation, enhanced CRM systems, strengthening the supply chain with new distribution centers, expanding the branch network through new builds or upgrades. This keeps the foundation strong and competitive.
Makes sense. Build the core first. What's next?
The second pillar is sustainable dividend growth. They have a strong commitment to consistently increasing the dividend, signals confidence in long-term cash generation. In FY24, they bumped it up 5% to $3.16 per share. That's about a 1.4% yield currently. The third pillar involves bolt-on acquisitions. As we discussed, that fragmented market is ripe for consolidation, and Ferguson actively pursues it. In FY24 alone, they invested $260 million to acquire 10 companies. And what's interesting is how their M&A strategy is evolving. It's not just about geographic expansion anymore. They're increasingly pursuing capability acquisitions.
Capability acquisitions. What does that mean exactly?
It means buying firms that specialize in higher margin value-added services. Things like fire protection engineering, advanced water treatment solutions, maybe mechanical room design and pre-assembly. These deals don't just add geography. They deepen their service offerings, embed them further with customers, and ultimately enhance overall profitability. It's a smart evolution.
Okay, got it. So organic growth, dividends, acquisitions.
Yeah.
What's the fourth pillar?
Finally, the fourth pillar is share repurchases. When they have excess capital beyond those first three priorities, they judiciously return it to shareholders via buybacks. They returned $600 million that way in FY24 and then authorized another $1 billion for future repurchases. Shows a commitment to enhancing shareholder value when appropriate. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, this balanced approach really demonstrates management's commitment to both fueling future growth through high return investments and directly rewarding shareholders. It's disciplined, thoughtful, and shareholder friendly. They also maintain a conservative capital structure, targeting net debt to adjusted EBITDA between 1.0x and 2.0x. End of FY24, they were at 1.1x, the low end of that target. That strong balance sheet gives them huge flexibility for acquisitions and returns, even in uncertain times.
So given all these strategic foundations and that clear playbook, how has Ferguson actually performed in the last couple of years? Navigating all the economic shifts we've talked about, inflation, higher rates, and looking ahead, what are the big opportunities and risks on the horizon for you, the listener, to keep an eye on?
Yeah, the past 24 months have definitely presented a challenging macro backdrop. It really stress-tested Ferguson's model. The sharp rise in interest rates starting in 2022 led to that significant slowdown in residential construction. That's still a key market, even with their diversification. Higher mortgage rates hit affordability, dampened new starts, led to deferrals of big renovation projects. It was a headwind. Concurrently, the operating environment shifted from high inflation to modest deflation in certain commodity categories. In FY24, they saw about 2% price deflation in some product areas. That created a headwind for nominal revenue growth. So yeah, navigating some complex cross currents.
Sounds tough. How do they hold up?
Despite those substantial challenges, their operational performance has been remarkably resilient. It's actually a testament to their strategy. In FY24, the company delivered broadly flat revenue. But here's the kicker. Management estimates the overall market actually declined by a mid-single-digit percentage.
Wow. So flat revenue in a declining market means?
Significant market share gains. For a company of Ferguson scale, that's truly impressive. This period really validated the defensive nature of their RMI-focused strategy. While smaller competitors likely struggled, Ferguson's scale, deep inventory, and reliability allowed it to strengthen its long-term competitive position. They likely picked up business. Adjusted operating margins did compress from that 10.3% peak in FY22, as expected, but they stayed robust, settling at 9.5% in FY24. They achieved this through active cost management and a relentless focus on productivity initiatives, protected profitability even with deflationary pressures and cost inflation elsewhere.
And they were still active strategically during this time.
Oh, yeah. They meticulously completed that corporate restructuring U.S. domicile primary NYSE listing, finalized the simplification, and importantly, they kept executing their M&A strategy. Closed 10 acquisitions in FY24, another 9 in the fiscal year ending July 2025, consistently consolidating even when things were uncertain.
So impressive resilience, gaining share, even with headwinds. That's powerful. Now, looking forward, you mentioned some strong tailwinds earlier. Let's dig into those key growth drivers. Because here's where it gets really interesting, right? These aren't just abstract trends, but concrete, multi-year drivers that could significantly shape Ferguson's future.
Indeed, these are fundamental, long-term drivers representing substantial opportunities. The first, and perhaps biggest, is continued market consolidation. With over 10,000 smaller competitors in that fragmented market, the opportunity to gain share through accretive, bolt-on acquisitions remains their most significant long-term growth lever. It's a multi-decade trend, and they lead it. Secondly, massive infrastructure spending from those federal programs IIJA, CHIPS Act. This is set to drive significant, sustained demand in non-residential markets for years. We're talking roads, bridges, critical water infrastructure upgrades, new semiconductor and battery plants. Ferguson is uniquely positioned, especially in waterworks, commercial, and industrial segments, supplying everything from basic pipes to highly specialized systems. They estimate this creates an incremental market opportunity of over $30 billion just in the next 5 years. That's a huge potential boost.
$30 billion incremental. That's substantial. What else?
Thirdly, there's the undeniable long-term tailwind of aging U.S. housing and infrastructure. It's a slow burn, but it's massive. Consider this. The median age of a U.S. home is well over 40 years, a huge portion built before 1980. This enormous installed base constantly needs repair, maintenance, and upgrades, replacing old HVAC systems, upgrading pipes, kitchen and bath remodels. This is consistent, often non-discretionary RMI demand. It's not cyclical, it's essential upkeep, and it extends beyond homes. Our critical infrastructure, especially water systems, is often ancient. Trillions needed in deferred maintenance. Ferguson's waterworks business is perfectly positioned to capitalize on these essential upgrades. Very durable, less cyclical demand.
Right, the need to fix what we already have.
Exactly. And finally, the secular trend of onshoring and mega projects. This is fueling a boom in large industrial facility construction. Driven by supply chain security concerns, geopolitics, incentives, we're seeing massive investments in semiconductor plants, EV battery facilities, other large industrial complexes. These mega projects require immense quantities of specialized plumbing, HVAC, industrial components, often complex engineering needed. Ferguson's ability to provide project management, custom fabrication, broad product range makes them an indispensable partner for these huge multi-year projects. Big demand driver. These aren't speculative trends. They are well-funded long-term forces actively in motion right now.
Okay, those are some powerful tailwinds, but we need a balanced view. What are the key risks that could throw a wrench in the works?
Absolutely need to consider the risks. First, despite their RMI focus, economic cyclicality is still a factor. A severe or prolonged recession that hits both residential and non-residential construction hard would still negatively impact volumes, pricing, profitability, even for Ferguson. Second, there's the risk of margin pressure. If they can't effectively pass through rising costs, labor, fuel, healthcare, or if deep deflation returns for their products, margins could get squeezed. Third, while mitigated, you always have to consider digital disruption. New entrants, more aggressive digital strategies from competitors could pose a threat. But as we discussed, this is mitigated by the nature of their business. Bulky, technical products, specialized logistics, expertise needed, harder for pure e-commerce to replicate the whole job value. Finally, with their high pace of acquisitions, there's always M&A integration risk. If they stumble integrating acquired company systems, cultures, it could disrupt operations and hurt synergy realization. It's an execution risk.
We've covered a tremendous amount today. Strategy, moat, financials, opportunities, risks. Now, let's put a price tag on it. What does all this mean for its current valuation? How is the market seeing Ferguson today? What's the view on this unseen giant?
Right, the valuation question. As of mid-2025, Ferguson's stock trades at a price-to-earnings, or PE ratio, in the high 20s, around 28-29 times trailing 12-month earnings. Now, this valuation is pretty dynamic. It's shown sensitivity to the economic cycle, ranging from as low as about 10x back in late 2022 when pessimism was high, to these current, more elevated levels. Other metrics. Price to sales is around 1.5x. Price to book is over 8.0x. So not statistically cheap on traditional metrics.
How does that compare to its peers, the Wascos and Core and Mains?
When you compare it, Ferguson's valuation is broadly in line with, or maybe at a slight discount to, some specialized peers. Its PE is comparable to Core and Main around 30x, but it's below Watsco at roughly 32-33x and significantly lower than SiteOne Landscape Supply, which trades at a much higher PE, over 50x. What's notable, though, and often justifies its current valuation, is that Ferguson consistently demonstrates superior profitability and return metrics like that ROCE we discussed, and operating margins compared to many peers, suggests higher underlying business quality.
So the market seems to recognize that quality, even if the PE looks a bit high.
That's generally the argument. The current valuation, while maybe seemingly elevated versus the broad market, can be justified if you view Ferguson as a high-quality industrial compounder. Its consistent ability to generate those high ROCE figures above 30%, coupled with a clear, disciplined strategy to reinvest capital into accretive growth, organic, and M&A, is the hallmark of a business that should compound value over time. Such businesses typically command a premium valuation because of predictability, resilience, efficient capital deployment. A positive re-rating could come if they really execute on those infrastructure growth opportunities, and the market fully values that long-term tailwind. Conversely, a sharp cyclical downturn or sustained margin erosion could definitely lead to multiple compression, bringing that PE down.
Okay, let's bring it all together now. After this really deep dive, what are the big questions we can confidently answer about Ferguson PlaceCheck? And what should you be thinking about as you process all this information we've covered?
Right. Let's synthesize. The first question we can answer pretty definitively is, how defensible is Ferguson's market position? It is exceptionally highly defensible, built on that mutually reinforcing trifecta: unparalleled scale, that incredibly dense distribution network, and deep, long-standing relationships with fragmented customers and suppliers. It creates that powerful flywheel effect we talked about. It's just exceptionally difficult for smaller players or new digital entrants to disrupt that entrenched value-added model.
Okay, very defensible. What about margins?
Second question. What is the sustainability of current margin levels? Adjusted operating margins have normalized from that unsustainable post-pandemic peak that was expected. However, the current margin profile in that healthy 9.2% to 9.8% range seems sustainable over the medium term, supported by their value-added services, ongoing productivity efforts, significant purchasing power. Margins will always fluctuate a bit cyclically, but the underlying level looks solid.
And management's use of capital.
Third, how effectively is management balancing growth investment with shareholder returns? They've shown an exemplary and highly disciplined approach. That four-pillar framework is clear, consistently applied, genuinely shareholder-friendly. Priority one is high-return organic and M&A growth to fuel the engine. Then it's balanced with a growing dividend and opportunistic buybacks, all while keeping a strong balance sheet. It's textbook high-quality management, really.
Got it. And finally, the big risks.
Lastly, what are the most significant risks that could materially impact the investment thesis? The most significant remains a severe, prolonged macroeconomic downturn hitting both residential and non-res construction hard. That would inevitably hurt, despite their resilience. A secondary risk is sustained margin pressure from costs they can't pass on or deep deflation. And while mitigated, you can't totally dismiss digital disruption structurally changing the industry faster than they adapt, or significant M&A integration stumbles. Those are the main things to watch.
What an incredible deep dive into Ferguson Paydick. From their truly transformative strategic pivot to that unbeatable network, that powerful flywheel effect, and their highly disciplined capital allocation, it's abundantly clear why they hold such a dominant position in an industry that quite literally builds the world around us. It's fascinating stuff. For you, our learner, we sincerely hope this deep dive has provided those essential aha moments and the concise yet thorough understanding you were looking for. about this unseen titan of the building products world.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, it does raise an important, maybe provocative question for all of us to think about. In a world that's increasingly focused on, you know, flashy tech innovations, constant digital disruption, instant gratification, what does Ferguson's long-term, quiet yet profound success tell us about the enduring power and future value of fundamental, maybe even unsexy businesses? What does it say about the companies that truly master logistics, cultivate deep relationships, and reliably provide the essential products and services that underpin our modern lives and our physical infrastructure? What does it tell us about where true, sustainable value is actually created in our economy?
Something profound to mull over, indeed. That's it for this deep dive. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to the next one.